From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the 12th day of August 2022. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll review the numbers as they were released at 11 a.m. Central Time by the United States Department of Agriculture, the first crop production report of the year for both corn and soybeans, along with an update of the monthly WASD, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'll give you an update of the agricultural news for the day, and we'll also hear about the weather forecast. That with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agribum, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's review the numbers first as they were released from the United States Department of Agriculture. The carry-in for old crop corn, now 1.53 billion bushels. Looking forward to the new crop, USDA released 175.4 bushels of the acre corn crop. That's down from the 177, what was the trend yield at the time. A carryout for the fall of next year at 1.38 billion bushels. They did drop the season's average cash price still to $6.65, down just a nickel. Soybeans were also lowered to $14.35. However, the crop size there went up, a yield of 51.9 bushels to the acre. That's up from the 51.5 bushel trend yield average that they've been working with ever since earlier in the year. The carry-in from this year, just 225 million bushels, and by the time next fall rolls around, USDA expects there will be 245 million bushels of soybeans left in the bin. Wheat carry out at 660 million from the old crop. That won't change anymore. 47.5 bushels to the acre is the yield for the winter wheat crop, and production at 1.783 billion in total, with a carry out of 610 million bushels into the end of the next year for a season's average cash price at $9.25. In Chicago, the reaction was like this. September corn today up 10.5 cents at $6.39¾, December at $6.42¼, 14.5 higher, and March at 14.5 higher, $6.49, the settlement price. September soybeans up 14¾. They had a low today, by the way, of 14.83, but settled at 15.35. November a low today of 14.15¼, settled at $14.54¼, up 5¾ in January at 14.60¼, up 5¼. Bean meal futures up 8.20. Bean oil for the day 32 cents higher, and soft red winter wheat was down 4¾ at $8.06. Live cattle futures in Chicago, 60 cents lower for the afternoon. Feeders were down $1.22½, and lean hogs were off $1.05 on this Friday afternoon, USDA report day across the nation. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com from Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss this morning's report, the impact in Chicago. Hi, Mike. Thanks so much. Soybeans reacted, of course, to what was considered a bearish report, but by the end of the day, they managed to come back. Tell me about what you saw.
I think what we saw, Todd, on Friday's close was a market that was still very nervous about the weather and yield losses. And it makes sense from the report standpoint that USDA would take down the corn yield, but maybe keep the bean yield the same. I don't necessarily understand why they raised it. Based upon the good to excellent and very poor and poor conditions on the crop progress, the drought monitor, even the vegetation indices would suggest to me you probably should have kept it the same given the weather pattern we are under. But be that as it may, I think the trade understood very well that that higher number could quickly be taken away and then some, probably in the September report, because of the weather pattern we're under. And it's not just a U.S. weather pattern. That's something that really developed this week that I think the listener needs to really kind of take in and think about, is that we have both a U.S. drought and a European drought, and we see a looming possible drought in northern Mexico and a looming possible drought in Ukraine as well. And I am also watching China and Southeast Asia. So it was interesting. BBC came on Thursday at midday and said that they were looking at weather-wise five high pressure systems across the northern hemisphere of the whole world. And I thought that's just quite historic. And I think the trade's finally picking up on that.
Yeah, so this would have more to do, I would think, with corn rather than soybeans. Canola, rapeseed probably doing not terribly bad. Soybean, of course, still to be harvested, but that's kind of a U.S. thing. The canola, rapeseed would be France, parts of Germany, other places in Europe. Corn, though, in France, we've started to talk about that a lot. And then even further to the west of them, in what used to be the Yugoslav Peninsula and those places, a lot of corn available in those areas. And USDA came up with a shorter corn crop, which many expected here in the United States. I suppose it all builds a pretty good case for corn to have support going into harvest here in the United States.
I think it should. I think we have to watch the wheat very, very closely. That's one other thing that we saw this past week that was very, very key. Was the wheat market tried to rally because of the weaker dollar. That was because of, I think, the Federal Reserve being maybe put into more of a box of not being as aggressive on raising rates because of those two inflation reports we got here in the United States. So I still want the wheat to hold up very well, especially as we go into harvest for corn. But I think generally speaking, you're exactly right. I mean, I did a windshield tour from Atchison to Detroit last week. I was shocked at how much of the crop degraded between Thursday when I left and Sunday when I came back. Todd, it was 92 degrees from Detroit, Michigan, all the way to Chillicothe, Missouri, and it only started dropping because it was 10:30 at night at that point. So I've got clients now sending me pictures after my crop tour and my crop report, my yield update, of verifying and helping me understand that this tip back issue that we've talked about the last couple of years, it's real. It's even starting to happen on some irrigated crops in areas that have had sufficient rain. I do think this heat is a lot different than last year, and that makes the corn crop a lot different than last year.
Was that mostly a 35 to 80 kind of run, or what did you do?
Yeah, it was mainly 36, 72. I didn't take the 80 route just because I didn't want to deal with the trucks in Chicago and the tollways. So I went up through Lafayette, got on the Hoosier Heartland Parkway, went through Fort Wayne, and then scooted on up to Detroit through Toledo. So it was a neat area because I was able to go through the drought monitor area of, you know, east central Illinois, west central Indiana. And I can tell you in Lafayette and in Tippecanoe County and on down towards Crawfordsville, down towards Wayne's home country, that gravel and that high ground, we were losing it when I was coming back on Sunday, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you saw a really big chunk of the country while it was by the windshield. I still think those who have watched it enough have an idea. I mean, sometimes the outside rows don't tell you that much, but boy, that's a pretty good run. What kind of numbers did you develop from that?
I actually came in at a 171.5 yield number, and part of that is because of what you just brought up. I think the Eastern Corn Belt east of the Mississippi River has been kind of overshadowed with some other talk of the Western Corn Belt. It's not as good as I wanted it to be. And again, that tip back, I think, would be pretty substantial. I will say from here going on out now, we've got Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska making up 46% of the 90 million planted acres. Those are the four states that I'll be watching the closest to see if my 171.5 stacks up correctly, because I did look at a lot of model data and some of the proprietary stuff I look at. It is quite a bit worse than last year at this point. And in states that it's not, it's right on the tipping point.
What'd you do with soybean?
Soybeans came in at 50.6. I feel fairly comfortable with that, and that's probably going to be, it's going to be hard for me to go below 50 unless we stay hot and dry at this point, because again, as you say, looking at the crops, it was holding up better under the heat. And producers, for the most part, except in parts of Illinois and in other areas that where they had some late starts and some problematic planting issues, it seems like I'm hearing that the beans are holding up a lot better under the current heat that we're in. But, you know, we both know the second half of August, rain makes those bean pods fill up. So we're still wide open there, too.
Still wide open, but I'm going to suggest that outside up in the July, in the November contract for the month of July, looks a lot more salient to you today after that travel from Detroit to Atchison than it did before for beans, and certainly the corn numbers have some bull in it from your perspective, I would think, too.
It's a really great point. I think that, and I think maybe the corn is on its way to trying to do what the beans just did by taking, you know, $3 off from low to high, roughly speaking. But we have to realize too, Todd, I think a lot of that came back to the Brazilian currency making an 8-week high. Funds came back on the beans really nicely. The Mexican drought started to play more of a role. These are things that I think we need in order for the corn to continue higher, because that incorporates the wheat and the currencies. And as we go higher to ration demand, if we have less competition and less substitution between corn and wheat, then that takes some of that sting out of the price rally. So these are the things to think about between now and September.
Did the world numbers support what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think they did. In fact, it was nice to see the wheat and the corn world numbers provide quite a bit of support, especially when you look at the detailed numbers of the wheat. We saw quite a bit of increases in Russia, 81 million, almost 88 million tons, and a couple other countries that are real key competitors against us saw quite a bit of increase. But even with that, we kept that world wheat ending stocks number below the lowest trade guess for 2021, and then that in turn kept us below the average trade guess for 2022. So a big drop in carry in stocks versus last month really helped us in wheat, and then getting back down to 306 in the corn for carryover worldwide, that was a nice supportive feature too. I see less battling between corn and wheat here, unless the currencies make a different issue here out of it.
And as we start to finish up our time together, can you go through some of the demand figures for both corn and soybeans and what you thought of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the export side of the equation is looking a little bit weaker for the soybeans, even though the USDA didn't give us that. They did give us some weaker demand in the back end with these weaker exports. And so we do have that rationing effect going on. But probably the most notable number was the fact that the USDA raised China's bean production. And I think that just speaks to the idea that what will they buy at these high of a prices, if they've got a pork complex issue again, and we've got ample supplies in Brazil. So I think beans are still the leader to the downside after today's report.
Does it tell you anything about the livestock sector and what they ought to be doing in this case?
Yeah, it does. And I didn't drill down too much, but I did notice that the USDA took the cattle and hog prices for 2022 calendar year up, and we're up to 142.10 in the cattle price for 2022. We're up to 73.80 on the hog price. I think that's probably due to not just the drought and hitting us in terms of supply of animals, but I think the USDA is probably assuming a big pullback in weight. So that's something we've really got to watch as we get into the fourth quarter of this year.
Do end users need to book some of their needs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the couple weeks ago when we were down lower, I looked at that real hard with the livestock producers. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing some catch-up hedging on the long side for the corn market. I probably would hold pat on the meal at this point, but for the rest of the year and going into Thanksgiving or something like that, I think it's better to have your upside protected as opposed to thinking it could go back down.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That is Mike Zuzel at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. One quick news item for the day. Senior Senate Finance Republican Chuck Grassley says a Senate-adopted amendment to the Inflation Reduction Act in the House is expected to pass today, and that could slam small pass-through businesses like family farms that report income as individuals. The Senate writer cannibalized a 2017 pay-for to lower the tax rate for small so-called pass-through businesses and used it instead to soften the blow from a minimum tax on big firms in the Inflation Reduction Act, he says.
We feel like it was very hastily drafted, maybe not well drafted. But I think we got reason to think it's going to be very harmful to the pass-through for the family farmer and other small businesses.
Now, Grassley went on to say if taxes go back up on these businesses when the current deduction expires in 2026, that will defy promises made about the Inflation Reduction Act.
And this refutes or is completely in opposition to this administration's claim that it's not going to be taxing people under $400,000.
And the small business pass-through rate rises back to the corporate rate, reversing the 2017 deduction.
From 35% to 21% for C corporations. And it didn't bring complete balance, but it brought more balance to it than we would have had otherwise. And this could be obliterating that.
Democrats refrained in their bill from trying to directly reverse the 2017 Trump tax cuts until the Senate amendment fight over how to pay for limiting a wider hit from the corporate minimum tax. And that's a look at today's Ag News. It's Friday. We always check with Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to see what the weather forecast is for the Corn Belt here in the United States, the growing regions across the planet. He now joins us. Hi, Eric. Thank you. It's a great Friday in our hometown here in Champaign County. Just beautiful weather to have the windows open and the birds singing, I suppose.
Yeah, but we're, you know, I'm glad we're here talking about that, because I'll tell you, some of the places I've been in the last couple of weeks wouldn't be singing the same kind of tune, especially as you go west. You know, I'm just thinking here about this whole season and where it is and the east versus the west specifically. And I've been pretty far east in this Corn Belt. I was in New York yesterday, talking to New York corn and soybean growers. They're also dealing with drought there as well. But if you come here to the U.S., we only have pockets, the central U.S., we only have pockets where there are still some issues when you think about Illinois, Indiana, that area. And it runs kind of through central Illinois and over into central Indiana. And some of that area has been cooler as of late. And there's going to be some rain going through Indiana later this weekend. Of course, we've had the massive flooding events down south in southern Illinois, parts of Kentucky, and then Missouri. But then you go west of there, and we really see some large areas that are dealing with low soil moisture values and still some oppressive heat. In fact, they still have, you know, three more days of 100-degree weather in parts of Nebraska. And Nebraska was an interesting state to tour. And I just want to bring this up real quick because we know that a lot of fields in Nebraska are irrigated. But they had two events that happened this year that were severe weather events, one in June and one in May, that went through and ripped up a lot of that irrigation equipment, a lot of those pivots. And if you go drive I-80 from like Omaha to Kearney, you'll see that most of them are laying on their side. A lot of them have been really just damaged. So I really wonder about what that's going to do to that crop, especially since it's got so much heat. So I think this is one of those years where we've not had a massive, garden spot. There's been places that have really taken a hit, which makes this upcoming forecast pretty important.
Well, what does it say? Do we have any changes in the offing?
We do. So because of La Nina, we've had just this massive central U.S. ridge that's favored better rains east, and it's kept the central and western corn belts quite dry. Well, that ridge is heading toward Washington State and British Columbia over the next few days. Now, we're going to have 100-degree weather in the central plains before it leaves, which means still more problems. But we've already seen the benefit of that ridge moving west here. It's pretty cool. In fact, I was looking this morning, some of the cooler weather going to the east coast in the next couple of days. Where it began life yesterday was the Canadian archipelago. That's in the Arctic. So they got some nice chilly air coming in there. Not a frost or anything like that, but certainly some cooler air. So what's changing here is if you shove all that heat west, we start to see better chances of rainfall in parts of the plains, in parts of the western Corn Belt. Will it undo the long-term drought issues? It won't, and it's not wide enough in coverage to do that. But it's going to bring in some cooler weather for most of the next 10 to 15 plus days. We might finish August on a cooler note. And so the folks that have rain and good soil moisture, this is going to be, just about as good as you could ask for what's left here of grain fill. And that's going to, I think, really help out some people. But it's only those folks that got the good soil moisture in the recent rains that I think are going to benefit most from this. Question is, how long does that heat stay west? Could be for quite some time. At least that's what the models are looking at.
You know me, I'm always excited to get a hurricane or two running off the west coast of Africa in hopes that there might be some rainfall. That makes it, for the soybean crop in late August, early to September, it's not a great thing to hope for, I suppose, but it does offer some opportunities. What do you know about the hurricane season?
Well, you're not the only one hoping for a hurricane. I mean, I've been down into Texas. I was in Memphis yesterday. And I mean, I've been down into the lower Mississippi River Valley, too. And you got folks down there who are hurting for some moisture that say, bring a weak one, let it sit over us, give us some rain. We just don't want the wind damage. And they're, I mean, they're hoping for that as well. Problem is that the Atlantic has not been producing. We've had very high wind shear in the Caribbean. Nothing sparked yet in the Gulf. And then every system that comes off the coast of Africa has got too much dust from the Sahara to the north of it, and it's really just squashing these systems. We had talked about that Saharan dust, but I couldn't tell you, I couldn't honestly tell you that earlier this year, I thought we would already have seen this hurricane season going. But it may be one of those years where all the action's in the second half of the season. And don't forget, we're still 5 weeks away from the peak of the hurricane season, so there's a lot of time to go here.
In South America, we probably should take a quick look down there, as the beginning of their next season is coming up within a month or so.
That's right. So they get the green light to start planting in Brazil, September 15th. And here's the issue. They're still in the heart of their dry season, so the monsoon's not back yet. They've got to wait on that rain to return. So even though they can plant on September 15th, it's not until the monsoonal rains come back that they start. And there's better indications that that might not be until we get possibly into the second week of October. And no, that's not too late. That's not a problem. The issue is southern Brazil and Argentina. Now, there is risk of drought development in southern Brazil and Argentina for their spring, just because there's a La Nina. But right now, there's better rains coming over southern Brazil ahead of all of this. The question is, do they last? Because southern Brazil will start planting, October into November. And we just need to know if those rains hang on. Now, if La Nina continues its stranglehold on the pattern, then it could be an issue where they don't go after those bigger acres down there aggressively early. And I do mean bigger acres. A lot of us have been discussing how big we think the South American crop might be. And most that I talked to, and plus yesterday I talked to some folks from Brazil, the thinking is that there's going to be a 4-5% increase in total acreage. And I think I've told you this before, Todd, but if they add 4% more acres, that's like adding an entire Kansas worth of soybeans into production this next year. So we got to watch them carefully. And by the way, come back north of the equator, the European heat wave that's been endured, lowest NDVI values across Europe that we've seen in 22 years. So there's some issues that are really starting to surface in Europe, including some dried up riverbeds, which is making pushing grain through the rivers pretty difficult there too. So there's just places all over the world that are struggling right now, and certainly there are spots in the U.S. too.
It's good to be a weather person, a meteorologist, and keeping track of it all. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dagrable. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to visit our website. There you'll find our Commodity Week program. It will air on many of these radio stations over the weekend, but you can hear it right now if you'd like, up online at willag.org, willag.org. Our panelists for the week include Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, and Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. Thank you for joining us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a good weekend. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.